Click, listen, enjoy.
Broadcasting live worldwide.
Thank you for tuning in to
Talkline Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.
What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Masks Weekly Radio Show on Family Matters. Masks, mothers and fathers, Aligned Saving Kids, kids of all ages and all stages for mental health issues, school issues, and addictions. If you know somebody that could benefit from calling our help line for a referral, whether it's for a therapist, an inpatient, outpatient program, for a school, a yeshiva liaison, whatever it is that they may need for their loved ones. Maybe they're depressed during COVID, they have high anxiety, are struggling with everyday life, and you need a therapist for them. Give us a call, 718-758-0400. Our helpline is confidential, and one can call anonymously. I'm going to repeat the number. Maybe you want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you sit next to, usually in shul. Our number again, 718-758-0400. Also, if there is somebody that would benefit from having an opioid overdose prevention naloxone kit, for free, we will train you via Zoom and mail out that kit to you. So if you know anyone that's struggling with opioids, it is the best kit to have available. God forbid they overdose, and you can save a life. So give us a call, set up a Zoom appointment, and we will train you how to administer the naloxone. That is an inhaler by the nose, and we will send you out your kit right away. So give us a call, 718-758-0400. And tonight I have with us a dear friend and colleague, Jamie Salzberg. I'd like to welcome you on the show tonight. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for everything you do for addicts and their families.
Thank you. My staff is always available. The ones that are struggling, whether they're an addict or whether they have a child in elementary school that's struggling with mental health issues, whatever it may be, a married child struggling, or yourself, give us a call. So, Jamie, let me just let everyone know that Jamie Salzberg is the clinical director for Transformations, and they operate as a substance abuse facility and a detox facility and mental health facility, a behavioral health outpatient facility. She's a trained clinician with experience working with families and couples counseling. She does mindfulness, meditation, cognitive behavioral therapy, EMDR, all social. And she's also the clinical social worker, not only in Florida, but also in Illinois and Alabama. So let's get right to it. This is not an advertisement for Transformations, which it happens to be a wonderful program We have my dear friend and colleague, Deborah Shabtai-Veer, who takes real good care of all the families that happen to have children in their program. You get the extra benefit of having Deborah, who is so wonderful and really gives of herself tremendously. So is Deborah, Jamie. All right. So
she is amazing.
Jamie, yeah, she really is. Because she's not only there in the facility for the client, but she actually really, you know, holds the hands of parents as well. So it's good to have that. Jamie, let's talk about what got you into the field of addiction.
Well, I mean, I can tell you I'm really passionate about addiction and mental health because I got into this field because I myself struggled with all of this. So I was living in New York City, working, going to school, and I think even from an early age I struggled with depression and anxiety, and I ended up getting into an issue with addiction as well. And it was very tough for me. And I know for me, the only way that I was able to change things was to actually go away to treatment. And so I went into this industry because it was the thing that saved my life. And I can tell you in terms of like family, so my family went through watching me struggle with this. And so the work that is done with families, I understand how important that is as well, because I know I saw what my family went through and how tough it was for them to watch me struggling.
So just for my listeners to know, some listeners may be new, MASC offers parent support groups. Dr. Debbie Ackman facilitates a group. Dr. Bencion Twersky, Dr. Trish Tia. We have several groups available for parents to learn about their loved ones' behaviors, whether they were molested, whether they have drug or alcohol abuse, whether they're, mental health issues, bipolar, schizophrenia, they're off the derech, they're on their own journey. Whatever it may be, elementary age, young kids today, Jamie, 12 and 13-year-olds that are acting out, very big today. The numbers when I started MASC were more like 15, 16-year-olds, and today it's 12 and 13-year-olds. So call early on so that you can get the right direction, the right guidance, the right support, not to go through these challenging times with your loved ones by yourself. So I just wanted to put out there, anyone interested in hearing more about the groups, give MASC a call. Jamie, let's talk about treatment for substance abuse. Some say that they'd rather see an individual therapist, and others, the parents or the person themselves, say they'd rather go inpatient when it comes to substance abuse. So let's talk about the benefits of both, please, and what the difference is.
Absolutely. So individual therapy can be so valuable. It allows somebody to process underlying issues. It allows them to process the choices that they're making. I think that the decision to go away to treatment typically comes when somebody either has tried individual therapy or it's readily apparent that this person's not going to be able to make those changes in their current environment. So it's often, there are so many things that go along with struggling with addiction, including the physical environment, the kind of people that somebody might be spending time with, and all of the different triggers that occur in the environment. And it is often very difficult for somebody to make changes staying exactly where they are. And so going away somewhere to treatment can be really effective because you're removing them from that environment and allowing them first to just address the behaviors, the mental processes, and the underlying issues, and then you can slowly integrate them back into that environment.
So at Mass, we always recommend that prior to sending anyone to an inpatient program, that they be seen by an addiction professional. So that also the benefit would be is that at some point when they need to be discharged from the inpatient program, they know where they're going back to, which therapist, and they don't have to start with the therapist after the program and start from the beginning again. So I want to talk about the benefit of an individual therapist first assessing the client and for relapse prevention purposes as well.
Absolutely. I think one of the most difficult things for people is that integration back and having, first of all, having a professional who can assess whether there is or is not a need for them to even go to treatment. Sometimes these issues can be addressed through individual counseling, but also, as you said, when somebody completes some kind of treatment program, having a plan and having a therapeutic relationship already in place is going to increase the chances of success when they get home, because it is very difficult to make that transition. And if you already have that therapeutic relationship and that trust built, it's going to be much more effective and give you a better chance of success.
So let's get right to it. What ideally should families keep in mind when they're sending their loved one to treatment?
So I think there's a couple things to keep in mind, right? One is the focus on your loved one who you're sending, so your child or whether it's another loved one. First, know that they're going to be going through a lot of difficult changes. So you're going to see changes in their behaviors, changes in their relationship with you. You're going to hear them talk about how difficult things are. They may want to run away from the treatment, and it may be difficult for them. So they may you may hear them trying to avoid or even talk about leaving. Just know that all of these changes and all of these challenges come along with the fact very difficult things about themselves. I think the other really important piece, though, that families need to keep in mind is taking care of themselves. It often happens that when particularly parents are helping somebody or have a child who's dealing with addiction or mental health, there is so much love and effort that is put into that they often forget self-care. And so when their child goes somewhere where they're finally being treated and safe, they may forget that they need to actually take some time and take care of themselves so they know that their child is safe.
Yeah, we spoke about that, was addressed last night in Dr. Twersky's meeting, actually, about the self-care. Once the drama that comes with substance abuse in some people's homes or mental illness, when their loved one does get admitted, they really need to take time out for self-care because they've been going through so many different emotions with their loved one. And also, you know, a lot of the parents feel like they failed their child, it was their fault or whatever. So we recommend that parents, while their loved one is inpatient, that they continue with therapy and or group so that they learn what their loved one is learning in the treatment center, such as 12 steps. Dr. Debbie Eckman facilitates a group, and she incorporates the 12-step concepts for parents to understand what it means, you know, so that when their child gets out and talks about a step, one of the 12 steps, that they understand themselves where their loved one is up to, or their spouse, or whomever it may be. So what about the challenges that the clients are facing now going into treatment?
Yeah, so it can be a very stressful process. People, when they're going to treatment, are being removed from their home and everything they know, going to a brand new environment. They are typically asked to share very difficult and very intimate details of their lives in order to process underlying issues, in order to process trauma, in order to process the things that they've been struggling with. And they're often asked to do this around people that they're just meeting. So just getting people to feel comfortable in treatment is one big challenge, because they're in addition to all of this, we're removing the thing that's had them feeling comfortable for so long, which is the drug or the alcohol. So you're taking away their comfort in a sense. Although it's an unhealthy comfort, it's still a comfort for them. And then you're putting them in an uncomfortable situation. While this is an extremely difficult thing to do, it's also vital to the treatment process and vital to recovery, because part of the job of treatment is to teach people how to live their lives when things get uncomfortable. So treatment is not designed to keep people comfortable. It actually is designed to push people out of their comfort zones. And so you have that challenge of making sure you're doing that enough so that they learn how to mitigate the challenges of life in that discomfort, but also keeping them engaged and motivated enough to want to continue participating in treatment.
How has COVID impacted the life of clients being admitted to a facility?
So there's been a huge impact from this pandemic, and one of the things happens before they get to treatment, which is the fact that there are fewer in-person support groups available, there's less in-person therapy available, there's less ability for them to connect with other people who may be doing the right things, and there's more, as we know, with addiction and mental health, isolation is extremely dangerous, and so there's definitely more of an ability to isolate as part of social distancing and keeping physically safe. People then become emotionally unsafe because they're spending more time alone. So that impacts both addiction and mental health. But then on the other side of that, there are the challenges of being in treatment. So here we are in a pandemic, in a time where we're asked to socially distance and stay away from other people, but one of the most vital pieces of treatment, of a treatment program, is making sure that people have contact with other people. And so there are certainly a lot of differences in the treatment programs, but it's also so important, if somebody is at the level where they actually need that treatment, that they do have that interaction with other people, while making sure that that interaction and the need for emotional support is also balanced out with the need for physical safety for the pandemic.
Right. So how do you feel the pandemic has helped communities actually understand addiction in a better light?
So this is actually one of my favorite questions to answer and talk about. Because I've always struggled with trying to help families understand what their loved ones are going through. And I used to actually tell family members when I would do family support groups or family meetings to try and think about what it might be like if somebody suddenly told you that you can no longer use your cell phone for, you know, the next month, or that you can no longer use something that is part of your life. And that doesn't necessarily, not everybody can relate to that, right? Because different people aren't as connected or as addicted to their cell phones, right, as somebody would be to drugs or alcohol. But I think with this pandemic, it's been almost this glimpse into what it might be like for somebody in treatment. So if you think about it this way, when somebody comes into a treatment program, essentially what they're being told is that the things that they've been doing are unhealthy and unsafe, and the things that they've been doing can hurt themselves and can hurt other people. That's one of the things. They're also told that their choices are not only affecting them, but affecting the people around them. And they're told that a lot of the things they've been doing to cope with life are no longer viable ways of living life, and that all of their behaviors need to change right now. And so there's been this opportunity with the pandemic, because if you all of those things I said really make a lot of sense into what we've been dealing with as a country and as a world with the pandemic, right? We've been told that the things that we were doing before are no longer necessarily safe or healthy. The behaviors that we have on a daily basis, interacting with other people, can actually hurt us and hurt other people. That our choices are affecting the people around us. That the things that we've been doing to cope. So, like, maybe some of the things that made us happy, like hanging out with friends and family, celebrating, spending time with people, those things that we used to live life are no longer good ways of living our lives or safe ways at this time. And we're told now all of your behaviors have to change. And so if you look at and think about maybe the community around you, the world around you, and even yourself, what it was like for you to suddenly be told all of these changes in behaviors. You need to wear a mask. You need to distance. You can't spend time maybe around the people that you love, like grandparents or great-grandparents. It's not safe to go certain places. It's not safe to be around a certain number of people. If those were things that you use to cope and to stay emotionally healthy, and all of a sudden someone comes in and says you can no longer do that, think about how that might impact you emotionally. And that's essentially what our clients go through when they come to treatment. They have all of these coping skills they've been using, and drugs and alcohol are part of those coping skills. Again, while they're unhealthy, those are part of their coping skills. And they're told you need to change all of that, you need to do it right now, and you're going to hurt yourself and other people if you don't. And it also helps families to understand, you know, if you've ever not put on a mask the right way or forgotten to put one on, if you've ever done something that may not follow all of the recommendations that you're told in a pandemic, right, it helps you to understand a little bit why not everybody smoothly goes through this transition of doing everything they're told for their recovery. Because this is a lot of change and a lot of behavioral differences. And so when people relapse or make mistakes or don't follow every recommendation, remember, they're human, and it's not always so easy to change everything about your behaviors.
So how is transformation remaining safe during the pandemic with social distancing and group and supportive contact if all of this is so needed in treatment?
Of course. So we do a lot of different things. We test clients when they first come to our facility. We keep them at a separate facility first, and then we keep them in a separate living situation, so separate apartments and separate groups the first few days they get here. That way, in case anything ever happens where somebody gets sick, it's a very small group. Once they are cleared medically, then they're integrated into a larger group. Our groups are less than 10 people, but those are the groups of people who have already been cleared. In addition to that, all of our clients and all of our staff are wearing masks. And I think that is, you know, I can tell you for us, that has been a successful recipe in terms of we have not had spread of illness at our facility. We have had, you know, a couple people come in sick. We have had a couple of staff members in their lives get sick, but we haven't had anyone get sick from anyone else here as part of treatment, because we've been so serious and so mindful about following these recommendations so that we can still have that social contact.
I have one more question, actually. I want to bring up the challenges for addicts and alcoholics when they leave treatment. What are they? Let's name some so parents understand where they are at.
Sure. So one is changing the relationship, which is often an unhealthy or codependent relationship with the people in their lives. So they come to treatment and they've gotten a lot of help and support. Sometimes the families are getting help and support too. But something has to change in that relationship, and often it's easy to fall back into the old patterns of relationships. Another one is finding a support system, which is particularly difficult during the pandemic, but making sure that they are keeping up with the recommendations of recovery, so things like attending meetings, going to counseling, going to a support group, having other healthy people around, different than the people they were around before, making all of those changes, because sometimes when they're in a supervised environment, making those changes can be easier, and then they return home, and it's not so easy without the structure and supervision to make all of those changes in their home environment. Also, triggers in the home environment that may be things that aren't even drug or alcohol related, right? It could be for someone the smell of a room or you know, a certain route that they take, you know, when they're driving that may remind them of something and cause those kinds of triggers. So seeing about changing some of those things so they don't have the same triggers from the physical environment, and especially the ones that you wouldn't think of, again, like the physical surrounding that may not be specific to drugs and alcohol but may remind them of something.
So at MASC, we say if you change the music in your home, your kids' dance steps could change. So the same thing with recovery, when your loved one comes home, it is learning a new dance. And it does take a lot of emotional support that they need in order to be successful. But I do want to add, exercise and good nutrition is part of that.
Absolutely.
Right, Jamie?
Yes, absolutely.
So for the parents' role during their recovery is they need to remember they didn't cause the disease, and they need to be able to celebrate small recovery anniversaries. You know, you do in the 12-step, they do the 90 days, they get a gold coin, you know, there are different stages, and that's why it's so important for family to learn the 12 steps while their loved one is in a program. But also, I just quickly want to say that in recovery, you know, we are all excited when the person gets home and, you know, you're thinking like they're all healed. They're not all healed. It's a lifetime struggle. Can you give me a half a minute about that, please?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you from you know, seeing clients and even from my own journey. I mean, I can look now and see how the challenges I put my family through and how I impacted them. But you know, in my early recovery, when I was first getting better, I wasn't able to see any of that. The emotional stability, the little challenges that came up that may not have even seemed like big issues to the people around me. All of those things were so much more difficult when I was first trying to get better. And every decision I made was, you know, a big decision, even if it was about a small thing, because I had to relearn how to emotionally manage life. And that doesn't happen overnight. And it doesn't happen
in
30 or 60
struggle.
Days either. Yeah.
Right, right. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for being on our show, but also I want to wish you great success in your personal life, and you should always be able to be on the giving end and be strong and healthy in all ways.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, and the same to you. And if I can ever support anyone, you know, I please reach out. I always want to give back what was given to me and helped me to get to where I am today.
Thank you. And anyone that wants to speak with Jamie, please call MASC and we will get her to call you back. So our number, again, 718-758-0400. And please go online to maskparents.org. Please make a donation so that we can help, you know, continue with these shows and help the community with the awareness so that we make it easier to fight the stigma with us, so that we make it easier on families that are struggling to be able to reach out and get the help they need. So thank you again, Jamie. I want to wish everybody a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and for now, virtually, hug tight. Our website is maskparents.org. Tonight's show is in memory of Simcha Shmuel Ben Moshe. Thank you.
and have a good night.
All those in favor of a COVID-19 vaccine, raise your arm. Safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines are here. Get yours when it's available to you. Learn more at nyc.gov/COVID vaccine.